give a fuck.
Are you sure?
I just don't give a fuck.
Presenting The Art of Not Giving a Fuck with Garrett Johnson.
All right. Hi, everyone. This is Garrett with Command Z and The Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Welcome to The Art of Not Giving a Fuck, Victim to Adventure podcast. Today, we've got a special guest, Will Griffin, coming to us from England. And welcome, Will. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Garrett. Good to be here.
Great to have you on. And lately, we've been doing Art of NGF daily training. So William's been joining us for that. That's been a lot of fun. We'll talk a little bit about that. But really what I want to dive into here, Will, is some of the wild experiences and stories that you have to share about, well, while you were taking some of the courses and what's gone on in your life. Because often what happens is I try to explain what's going to happen when you do this Command Z or Art of NGF coursework, but it's nearly impossible. So I figure it's way better to actually hear it from people out in the field, out having the actual adventures, because then you'll get a deeper sense of what can go on, all with the knowledge that it's going to be unique to you. So William, thanks again for coming on. And I wanted to start out with just how did you end up finding out about this Command Z and Art of NGF work?
Well, I used to go onto the Alterati website once in a while and poke around at some of the content on there. And a few years back, I downloaded the Undoing 101 kind of introduction podcast and listened to that in the car on the way back from work. And remember at the time thinking, this sounds like a next step that could be interesting, but it scares the pants off me. So it took me a while to kind of circle back around to it again.
Yeah, that's there's a lot of folks that come around in that way. I know myself included that it when I first learned about some of this stuff, it was intriguing and terrifying. And but it always it's sort of yeah that's great to hear. I'm glad that it came around for you. So what was it that what was the impetus? What was going on for you? How was your life? What were you feeling that? What led up to this? Was there any kind of circumstances or?
Well, it depends how far you want to go back. I mean, I started off kind of like being interested in trying to get to the bottoms of things, what's it all about? All that kind of thing.
Sure.
So I was initially interested in science and I thought that's the route to truth. Yeah, that's definitely the way forward. Got into that, there was one particular occasion, actually, I was studying physics, and I had a great physics teacher for A-level. And we had to do a practical experiment one day, and beginning part of the experiment was to write down your assumptions. So I started, writing down my assumptions and stuff, and I kept writing down my assumptions. And I kept writing down my assumptions, and everybody else had already started. I was thinking, am I doing something wrong here? So I talked to the teacher, and I said, how long am I supposed to write this? But I can't, there's more assumptions than I can think of here. How long do I go for? And he said, you could tell I was obviously a little bit freaked out by this, I think. And he said, it's only a model. It's not about the world. It's just a model. And then, so that was a bit of a whoa kind of moment for me. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe it's philosophy is the way forward. So I ended up studying physics and philosophy. And that was a lot of fun. Some really interesting stuff came out of that. And at the same time, I got into, I met a guy when I was studying, really interesting bloke, and he introduced me to Robert Anton Wilson and his books. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the start of kind of delving into all this kind of thing, and which ended up me listening to that that podcast about 7-8 years later.
Wow. Excellent. Yeah, that's a good pathway. Yeah, a lot of folks have come around through through Wilson. I think that's interesting. I remember those books dropping into my life at some weird time through some strange character. Weird thief guy. He gave me those books and he ended up stealing a bunch of other stuff of mine. In the end, it's great. I'm glad he did because it's a great part of the story. But But yeah, Robert Anton Wilson, interesting. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, he sort of lays the groundwork in people's minds for there to be new seeds planted, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Prometheus Rising was the one that really did it for me. I started doing some of the exercises from that, and I thought, actually, there's something in this.
That says a lot about you, William, that you actually did the exercises in that book. And, you know, as you know, Wilson like hammers away both in the introduction to the Undoing book and in throughout that book, Prometheus Rising, saying, like, really do the exercises. It's totally different if you do them than if you just read about them and think about them. And it's constantly saying that. And I met lots of people who told me, like, yeah, I read that and I realized, yeah, then I really will do it sometime, they thought. Like, you know, I will do that sometime.
Yeah, there's bits like that in the Energized Meditation and Other Devices as well, where it's like, yeah, stop reading now, go and do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first time I read it, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the second time around, I thought, actually, yes, pull your finger out, get going.
Yeah, it's... So that's great. Well, and that's exactly like, that's the type of folks, you know, it's nice to be around people who are interested in taking action. And what you'll find then too, if you work on a project with folks that are also primed to take those type of actions, things will get done a lot faster and more efficiently and more fun. And those are some great exercises in Prometheus Rising. So what was the first actual experience you had then with Command Z? I mean, what led you up to finally make the leap? Or what workshop did you get involved in?
Well, I kind of started from the Energized Meditation book. Mm-hmm. I started doing a couple of exercises from that. And then I kind of put it on the shelf for a while. And then I got the DVDs. From Original Falcon, the Hyatt Energized Meditation and Undoing DVDs. Mm-hmm. And I followed the first one through and the second one through and started doing that once a week. There was a few kind of changes that started to happen in my life. I got fed up with my job. Mm-hmm. And decided to leave that. There was a long notice period there, so I kept doing those exercises through it. And then a few times I'd come back to the Command Z website and thought, maybe I will, maybe I won't. And I'd listened to a few of the podcasts and had a look at some of the materials. And I thought, right, now's the time. So then I dropped an email to Andrew, sort of stick my head above the parapet. Things sort of sped up from there. He answered a few questions for me about, you know, doing stuff along during the week, every day in between the weekly sessions that I was doing from the DVDs. And then the opportunity arose to get involved with the self-hypnosis, the energized self-hypnosis course that you guys put on. Mm-hmm. And again, that was another kind of big, like, will I, won't I kind of moment for me. Mm-hmm. But part of the process that happened as I was kind of quitting the job and setting up a business and stuff was the kind of like, well, you may as well get on with it. You may as well do stuff. I mean, I used to be into all that, you know, the 2012 kind of prophecy kind of stuff. And obviously mm-hmm. that came and went. And I kind of thought, okay, well, we're in the beyond times now. So kind of all that, we're free of that. It's a liberation of that. So, you know, what can we do with this beyond times, these free times we've now got? You know, may as well get on with it. Experiment with all these things. Or, you know, actually do the work on these ideas that I've been kicking around since like 99, 2000.
Right.
you know.
Yeah.
So that, and it was kind of a communication to the unconscious that okay, right, or kind of leaving the library as you called it, leaving the library and entering the theater. Stopping the reading and the thinking and coming away from reason and the mind and into the doing and back to the world kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got on the course, the the Energize Hypnosis course.
We're calling it Imagination Training now. I think we're going to have a nice long name because there's so much in there. But yeah, it was the Power of the Unconscious Mind, Energize Hypnosis. Yeah. All kinds of names for it, but that's the workshop. Okay, so what, and you said there that it was a will I, won't I moment. How did that feel to you? I mean, I want to know just like what, because we designed that, all these to build up to a peak. There should be a real moment, just the decision to do the workshops. It's my intention that the groundwork has been laid and there's enough out there, the podcast, the materials, the blog, whatever else, all the different things on the YouTube, that by the time you're making the decision to take a workshop, that once that decision is made, everything else is like downhill. The motivation's there, the inspiration, there's, oh yes, these are the exercises. I'm fully tuned into them. So that it should be a decision like that. But I want to know what is that like for you? What was that crescendo moment, or what was it?
It was complex. I mean, there was a lot of fear. There was a lot of victim script kind of stuff around. Is this all like some big hoax? You know, like, do you know what I mean? Like you start getting into the and you're. Kind of the mind comes up with all these like, yeah, but what if this? And oh, it could all be this. Just could be a scam. It could, you know, and like, no, come on, like, let's do it. Let's take the risk. Let's make that transition. And who knows? You know, maybe it is. So what if it is? You know, even if it is some huge joke, and suddenly the website disappears and. You know, you guys vanish into the ether and right. As if you'd never been, you know, what I mean? Even if that happens, then that's kind of like an educational experience. That's kind of the point I had to get myself to, mm-hmm. where it was like, it was almost like a surrender to an accepting of all those risks and all those fears and doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. It's nice to, that's the quality I think comes from true initiation. The few so-called magical or ritual initiations I've witnessed or been a part of, and then the others that were more by life itself, the initiation of hitchhiking or different life transitions, let's say, getting a driver's license, whatever those rites of passage have transformed into. They're there still. People say they're not. They are there, but they are of a different nature now. They're hidden within the context of daily life, but these are specific initiations, and that's one of them. Is when you, for me, I know when I made the decision to go to one of Hyatt's workshops and throw down the money for that, that was the huge deal to me. It was the most I'd ever spent on anything, and it was so that moment that of making the commitment to whatever that was, even though it was rather mysterious, what would occur. Something started to happen. It was like an earthquake, I know, under my sense of stability, which was a false sense of stability that I would later discover. But anyway, that's fascinating to hear from your perspective, because it's not something I usually get to hear, and probably not something that people are always bringing to the surface. So it's nice to know it should be sort of a little bit of trepidation. Because things are going to change, things are going to shake up. So that let's go into that then. So what happened? I mean, so then we start doing the workshop. The website doesn't disappear, and there are exercises. There's materials. What happens next?
Yeah. So it was. First of all, it was really good to be in a group of people doing it. That's the big change for me, because I've been doing the stuff on my own and from the books and the DVDs. The sense of being in a group of people with a common, kind of embarking on a common enterprise, made doing the undoing exercises feel quite different, and have a different kind of effect on me. Then also, you know, some of the hypnosis techniques just in themselves were kind a bit of a revelation, really, because one of the things I think I was looking for in it was of communicating with the unconscious, or communicating with what I call that. And suddenly there it was. There was a procedural thing that you can do, and it's very simple and straightforward, and it works. And that kind of blew my mind a bit. Choosing specific, kind of things to suggest to myself, and then the next day finding that they worked. That's one of the things that I was looking for as far as coming away from this kind of these elaborate systems and structures and ideas and concepts and reason level stuff back into methodologies and experiences. And it was really a really concrete one of those.
Excellent. Yeah. So what do you have an example of a suggestion like that? Because again, that's super helpful to people, both folks that are doing it already and then folks who've never tried any of this, to hear how simple it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought I'd try something really mundane to start with, which was, at the time, I was having some challenges with my business with balancing kind of like getting into the nitty-gritty detail of specific tasks for specific clients versus zooming out and going, okay, right, I need to plan my tax schedule and, like, you know, I need to get my sales pipeline going and all these sort of macro level kind of concerns about the whole business. So I'd be there trying to focus on something that required that specific narrow focus, and all these ideas would be popping in going, oh yeah, but what about this? Oh, don't forget that. Oh, and we've got to make sure that happens. And I'd end up doing neither. Mm-hmm. They were compromising one another. So the suggestion I gave myself first was something like, you will glide effortlessly from the minute details out to the global overview effortlessly and enjoyably, something like that, along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave myself that suggestion, and then the next day it just kind of happened. I felt very relaxed going through the whole day, and I did do some of the nitty gritty kind of stuff, and I did do some of the overview kind of stuff, and I focused on each, and transition between them was smooth. And I didn't really think about the suggestion that I'd given myself whilst I was going through the day. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I thought, wow, I feel really different compared with this point in the day yesterday. Blimey. That worked.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a perfect example. And that's where I feel comfortable using the terms effortless change, because you're not doing the old focus of, like you said, using the reason and trying to change it. There was no systematic approach to trying to change it, or, oh, make notes about the overview and then come down and focus on the small view and then influence da 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 da. There was none of that. There was just glide through both. And then you forget about the suggestion because it's not to your conscious mind, it's to your unconscious, to the operating system. Yeah, that's great. I'm glad. And that's a smooth demonstration of it. And then the thing is that it builds on itself. So now you had reinforcement. You see, oh, that whole thing worked. Now the next suggestion is going to be even easier to operate, to make work, to allow to happen. So yeah. Okay, so then what else? I know that the course had quite a few different adventures and angles on it. Is there somewhere you want to... I know that we can go into the story about the notebooks. That was sort of a side adventure, but this is how things develop. So anyone who's... when you're taking the workshops, then it'll... sometimes obvious adventures will present themselves. And that's where being a part of the group and working together comes into play, is that you might not notice the opportunity for a specific adventure, whereas someone else might. So how did this come about?
Well, it was kind of a passing comment that you'd made, because I think I'd said something about that I was clearing out my house and getting rid of stuff and purging things. And you made a suggestion about carrying it around to feel the weight. I thought, yeah, okay, I could do that. And then I thought, well, I'm going to get rid of it anyway. Why don't I carry it to the dump and get rid of it? So I got all these notebooks. Well, I had all these notebooks from years and years of work. You know, like there was maybe 35, 40 A4 ring-bound notebooks that I'd hoarded ever since, like, I don't know, like, yeah, 10 years worth of stuff. And I thought, oh, you know, I might need that. I might need to refer back to those notes at some point in the future. So they were just stacking up, I had piles of them. So I thought, right, no, let's get rid of them. So I put them in a rucksack. It filled quite a big rucksack, and decided I was going to carry it to the dump and get rid of them, recycle them. So where I live, there's kind of a couple of hills. It's not far to go. It's like 5K maybe, but there's a couple of big hills in between. It's quite undulating landscape. So I was carrying, it must, I don't know what they weighed, like 20, 25 kilos, something like that. Quite a lot. It certainly felt quite a lot pretty quickly. So I was there feeling this, you know, in the shoulders, feeling the weight of it. I was thinking, yeah, Garrett's right. He's too right. So I carried it all the way to the dump, and yeah, it was pretty knackering. And kind of when I got towards the dump, there was like a big queue of traffic waiting to go in. So I walked down like the queue of cars to get to the front, and got to the gate. And this guy at the gate just said, no, you can't come in. I was like, well, you know, why? Why can't I come in? I brought this stuff a long way, you know? And he's like, no, you can't come in on foot. There's not no pedestrians. Sorry, you're gonna have to go away again. So I was like, shit, I'm going to have to carry these all the way back home again. I really don't, you know, just like the whole, not just the physical thing of doing that, but thinking like the symbolism of that. I'm going to carry this all the way back home again.
You have to keep it. Yeah.
So, I started walking back kind of like a bit at a loss down the queue of traffic, and I saw there was a few cars back, there was a guy there, and he had like an estate car, like, and it was rammed with stuff from the back all the way through to the front, apart from his seat and the passenger seat. The passenger seat was empty, and the window was down, you know, and I could see him straight in through this window. So I said, you know, I leant over and I explained the situation. And I said, you know, can I get in your car, please? And he's like, yeah, of course you can, no worries, in you come. No problem. And sat in there with him, you know, talked to him a bit as we drove up, and the traffic moved in and got out. And so I was in, and it was great. So I then had to, like, take the notebooks out of the rucksack. And there was, like, a separate, like, hopper that I had to put the cardboard in, a separate hopper for the paper. So I was like, okay, I'm going to tear these things apart. So I was tearing these things apart. And as I tore apart, I could see like the pages, and they'd fall open, and I'd see like a bit of my writing, and I'm like, oh shit, oh yeah, that thing from like 6 years ago, yeah. Oh well, actually, maybe I do need that, you know. And then I was like, no, I can feel it like sucking me back in again, like get rid of it. So I chucked them all in, and like put my rucksack back on, and it was just like weightless, and walked back out of there. No need to leave in a car. Just walked back out of there. Walked home. Yeah.
So how did that feel, that whole process? I mean, that's let's zoom in on it a little bit, because there's a lot going on, a lot more going on than if you just, you know, took a video of you going, which would have been great to see. I mean, it's almost like a nice short film. But going up the hill, and then you said there was some emotional content, obviously. There was some kind of purging that was beyond just the... And I don't mean metaphoric either. I mean, it's very literal. That takes place. It's almost as though the notebooks and the depositing them in the trash and all this stuff is the metaphor for this internal process that's more literal. You see that? Yeah. Like, it almost flips things on its head. That's, and the undoing has that effect too. Things... The reverse, what you thought was a metaphor, is literal, and vice versa, inside, outside. But yeah, do you care to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, those were notes that I'd made in these previous jobs, which were just, they were means to an end. They had no, you know, they were a prison, you know, really. They, you know, obviously allowed me subsistence, but as far as like anything more than that, they didn't really have any content other than, they were some form of trap. So the fact that I kept all these notebooks was like, I'd started my own business, I'd set up, but I'd left there. Still, there was obviously some kind of part of my mind that was, or part of me that was linked back to it, and that somehow was like some umbilical cord, but going back to that, like, oh, just in case, maybe they'll have me back, you know, just in case it all goes wrong, maybe I better keep those, just in case, because, you know, if it all does go wrong, maybe I'll need to remember all that stuff and better hang on to them, kind of thing. I mean, that wasn't conscious, but
yeah,
I guess that was what was going on. So there was the physical weight of that, you know, that tie, that encumbrance with the past. Was what was there, I think.
Yeah, it's like closing a bunch of open tabs too, or each one, you know, a running tab in your web browser, or a bunch of open programs that are running on the system. Outside of awareness, like you said, but there was that heaviness of it was correlated with that fear-based thought process. That was it. That takes energy and tension. It takes it. It requires, you know, fuel. So throwing that out, you know, and feeling it, going through that. What's interesting, the brain gets attached to everything, every situation, every object that it thinks it owns, and all this stuff. That you can demonstrate that in science. There's studies. I've tried to track down the specific one, but if anybody listening knows more, just definitely email me the info. But there are studies you can track down that show when, even when you give, so if I give you a cell phone or something, I tell you you can keep it, then 5 minutes later I tell you, no, sorry, you have to give it back. Your brain registers a pain response from anything you think you own. And then when you get rid of it, it registers the same reaction as an actual physical pain response, the same kind of chemicals, same kind of state. So being willing to move through that and knowing that that's there allows us to let go. That's the actual letting go. Letting go of something, actually letting go of it. So when you threw those in there, you could have pulled them back and brought them home again. Then you would never have let go of it. But then you had the opportunity. So the throwing them in the dumpster was one thing. You could probably still throw them away and not let go. Still hold on to the fear. And then even more fear, because now you don't have the information you need to return to your old job or something. So you could have stunted the process. But I know that adding in the physical work that led up to you thinking about the notebooks in the first place. So you diminished a tension layer enough that it revealed a pain cycle. And then you cut into the pain cycle. Instead of it looping, it was able to flatten out. You were able to move, make actual movement out of that cycle and let it go. So it dropped out. But what happened there, at least from my perspective, is you diminished the tension layer enough, unmasked it with the undoing work, with the physical exercises that were coupled with all that energized hypnosis work. Then something brings the notebooks to your awareness, because they just as easily could have stayed there and you'd ignored them through the course and they'd be unimportant. But for you in that particular case, they became something you were aware of. And then the exercise presented itself organically. And then and then even for you, I mean, all I said was carry him around. And then for you, it became a special organic adventure. But I bring all this attention to that because I want everyone to know that there's the workshop, there's the buying of the workshop. That's the first step, a big experience. There's the, you know, you getting close to that, feeling ready for it, feeling the rightness of it, then taking it, doing the work. And then there's your life that starts to flower out into adventures that I can't predict, that you can't predict. That the fuel, the stuff of those adventures is already there around you. In this case, the notebooks, for example, the dump, the hills, the settings, you know, are there. So what I'm trying to point out is that everything you need is already there, all around you, already, you're already immersed in it. It's great. And then we start this process of sort of diving into what's actually going on. Does that make sense from your perspective, William?
Yeah, totally. And like the fact that the guy tried to turn me away at the gate as well, it was like, you know, it was like, oh, here's your last chance kind of thing. You could turn back. Yeah. You could just take them back home. Yeah. Could just hang on to them. And I remember thinking at the time, of course it's not going to be this easy. Of course I'm not going to just walk in there. It's like this guy would been put, you know, this is where it started feeling weird at the time. You know, it's like hairs on the back of the neck thing. It's like you're in the drama and this guy is a character there to play that role that he's playing for you. And that's an interesting sensation. And I've had that a few times as well, a few other occasions where you think, actually, this situation here is kind of almost like engineered opportunity to experiment or to play or to make choices that, and maybe they were there all along. You know, maybe those kind of opportunities were there all along, and it was just an increase of awareness that made me notice that those opportunities are there. Or, you know, it's like going back to the Prometheus Rising book with the exercise where you're looking for quarters or 20 pence pieces or whatever.
Yeah.
Are there more there because I'm looking? Or am I creating it with my mind? You know, who cares? You're in it, and it's interesting, and it's fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, that's a beautiful story, and it's wonderful to be exploring, to get that flip with the internal-external thing. I think that's the confusion between is this going on inside or outside? Is it engineered? Is this happening right now, or was it already pre-scripted? And ultimately, that doesn't matter, but the rational mind is out of the way enough for you to actually enjoy the adventure as it unfolds. Now, that's what's cool about it is there was disappointment, there was sadness, there was excitement, there was anticipation, there was buildup. There's all the qualities of a story. Excuse me. And underneath it, there was that layer of fun the whole time. Even when you said, you know, you're walking down the hill disgruntled or not disgruntled, but disappointed or sad or confused, whatever it was. And then suddenly the next part of the story opens up and you go in and then there's triumph. And so this is a clue into why diminishing the focus you place onto your preferences in any given situation, your likes and dislikes, and putting much more of your focus onto what's actually going on, the unfolding of the adventure. So if we drop some concern for our likes and dislikes, our preferences, that's, I think, one way to start to see the vast amount of opportunities and adventures that are all around us. You know, if you're going to take a long hike somewhere, it might in the mountains, it might rain, it might hail. There might be all kinds of different shit that happens on that hike. You know, you might get tired or whatever it is. And you know that ahead of time, and yet we still decide to take whole hikes. And when you look back, it's always great. Oh, that hike was amazing. It rained, it hailed, we ran, it slipped in the mud. Oh my God, I was all angry. And then then there was a waterfall, whatever it was. And the same with this story. So that's another, I think, quality of some of the art of not giving if a particular angle of these things and the way that some of the workshops can unfold. You're finding that layer of fun, yeah, regardless of whatever the hell seems to be going on. And even if you're the character William has other preferences and those aren't being met, that's fine. You know, how do you have the story without that piece? So what else? Anything else? Any other stories come to mind you want to throw in the mix here?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like there's lots of little things that that have happened. You know, like, for example, like the whole victim to adventurer thing. There's lots of little kind of microcosms of that that have happened, and I've kind of not necessarily been aware of them happening at the time, but kind of afterwards I'm like, oh yeah, that's one of those. Like, so I'd met a guy at a friend's wedding, and he'd potentially, I thought he's a potential client for me, and I got his number, and then that went on the back burner. And then one morning I was thinking, I need to ring that guy, but he might say no, and like, he might not be interested, and am I going to be like articulate enough to get my proposition across? And I was like, right, no, I'm just going to ring him. Screw that. Who cares what the outcome is? It's just a telephone call. It doesn't matter. I'm going to die. and that kind of puts it in perspective. It's just a phone call. So I just went ahead and made a phone call. And like, the guy was like, oh, that's really weird that you should ring me now, because actually I'm just looking for somebody to do what you can do for me. Like, right this morning. He'd literally just come off a conference call with somebody else, and he was like, I need somebody to sort this out. And then I rang him like 5 minutes later, and like, now I've done a couple of pieces of work with them, and he's become a really good client. And if I hadn't heard, just gone, no, I'm going to do it. If I hadn't kind of, I could have just succumbed to that victim script at that time, and that would have been a different branch, and all these other things that did happen, because I thought, no, what the hell? Let's just, nothing to lose. Let's just do it. Find out what happens. If I hadn't have done that, then it would have been a whole different path to go down. And so that's there's been quite a few little things like that. It's not like a life changing event, but it's just making that decision and going with it and choosing to just enjoy it and take the risk and what the hell and explore, that has led to a lot of other opportunities that wouldn't have otherwise have happened.
That's excellent. And I love to hear the way you put it. Cause again, it's really hard to actually communicate this type of stuff. I can boil it down and put it out there, but really it's awesome to hear sort of how the texture and the quality of your experiences have developed. And to folks listening too, I want you to guys, when you listen to this, if you listen again, be aware of the perspective that William has on all these things, and how the quality of his approach, which has allowed him to accelerate very quickly into this work, which is that we didn't hear him say, oh, I wanted to solve all these problems, and I felt really terrible, and I had to like deal with this life situation, and then there was this and this and this and this. It was more, I wanted to find out what in the hell is going on and explore that. And it seems like it's driven by a sense of fascination, exploration. And not that you don't, I'm sure you've had, you have struggles and pains and emotions like the rest of us. But what I'm saying is that the perspective that you began with, I think, is pretty fresh. And that's not to put anybody down. It's to say, hey, you have this, there's things about your life you can change right now just listening. And one of those is the focus. So listening back to the beginning about how you described, Will, how you came about all this and stuff, that's refreshing. And so I want anyone listening to know that, explore that in your own mind right now. What would it feel like to you to, what would you like to explore? What would it feel like to explore as opposed to just running away from rejection or trying to solve a bunch of problems or overcoming, things that you think are bad about yourself from the past or whatever it is. That stuff will be overcome. You will be absolved of all your so-called sins, and we'll make sure of that. But that's going to take place through you, your explorations, and through you letting go and accepting and allowing things to unfold. So I just wanted to highlight that as well. It's nice to hear that you're coming from that perspective. Not that this stuff won't solve a lot of issues and won't make things much more possible. And you hear that in the way you tell the stories too. But that you can get started and things will definitely open up. Last thing I wanted to ask you about is we just finished day 8 of the 365-day Art of NGF adventure. Any comments about that so far? I'm really curious about how that's going.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the way I described the enrollment for the imagination training workshop, it was a similar thing with this for me. I guess maybe that's because it's another step of intensity doing it every day. Because it's a commitment. And I kind of had to bring myself around to that level of commitment as well. But part of what did that was you guys were sending out the emails talking about it. And I was like, that sounds really cool, but also it sounds like such a big deal. And like every day, whoa. But then I've been doing my own little thing every day since the new year and before Christmas. And I thought, well, it's not that much of a change. Hang on a bit. Like, Garrett's going to have to be doing this, like coming up with this stuff and structuring it and putting it out. And he's doing it every day. Like, he's doing it every day for a year. And again, this is kind of relates to one of the triggers for me for going on the original imagination training workshop as well, was, well, this could be my only chance. You know, it's not like this is going to come along again. Like, get on the bus kind of thing, you know, because it might not come by my stop again. So that was kind of the thing that made me finally go, yeah, okay, I'm going to do it. And having begun doing it, it brings that working together thing into a much more, much different level of intensity, because you're doing it every day and it builds, it's kind of a cumulative thing and it feels like it sinks in. And there's some kind of dialogue happening or beginning with something. I know it's hard to put it into words, really, but and that kind of it feels like that is being nurtured by that daily attention in a way that it wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with the daily. And it's funny because your mind could elude it each day. Every single day doing the exercises and having these experiences is funny because even my own mind will often elude the power of it. And I don't care what my mind says anymore about it. But doing it along with you guys, yeah, it has pretty powerful reverberation effects for me too. And it forces my mind. I knew this ahead of time, but it forces me into thinking about it and being in that awareness all the time. So when I go to sleep, I know the next morning it's going to be waking up doing that, those exercises again, especially with necessity of meeting with everybody else. And then with you guys, there's much more coming out of me too, because whatever questions you have, or even experiences you have, or even just being present, seeing you, then I'm inspired to present and do, to allow to come out whatever's going to help every individual the most in that experience. So yeah, it's a way to work with other people without the oppression of a group. There is no groupthink, and I know that there's not. I'm fully aware of that all the time, that I'm not allowing any groupthink to take place. There's no opinions that we all agree on. There's nothing that, you know, there's, if that happens, it's incidental and no one will even notice, because each individual is the king of their own infinite space. I mean, or queen, as it may be. That's important to keep in mind, because a lot of groups I've been a part of, I end up being like, fuck, it's never quite right. But this, there is no membership. There's no group, but there are a bunch of individuals who are fully there with you to work on this. And that's something to keep in mind. You can do that in your own life too. You know, engage more deeply without being a part of something. Does that make sense? I don't know exactly how to put it. Don't mind meld. Be you, and you will be a much greater contribution to the things you take part in. And you'll never be afflicted by any kind of group, you know, so-called group disease. You know, you won't find yourself lynching someone because the group says it's the right idea. That's the type of individual you know, wanting to remain.
Yeah, I think it's presence as well. You know, what you're describing, when you're present, you can't be subsumed in that way.
Mm-hmm. Has that been reflected in your experience then as well? I mean, with the workshops, with the in this Command Z NGF thing?
Yeah, there isn't a group, but there is a collection of individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because there isn't, I think to get to the point where you have sufficient interest to get involved, you kind of have to have already kind of left some of that behind anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the impression I get myself anyway, that, you know, people aren't needing to have that, like, oh, let's have some little chitter-chatter and, like, talk some small talk so that we can feel comfortable with each other, because otherwise we'd be a bit scared. that's not really necessary.
Yeah. Excellent. Cool. Well, I think we covered a lot of ground here. I want to say thanks again, William, for coming on. It's great that you're willing to come and share all these stories and experiences, and I look forward. We'll do another one of these down the line after we get 100 or 150 or so days of the NGF Daily under our belts. But for now, I want to say thanks a lot, and I think this will be really useful for a lot of other folks, too, that are considering jumping in and who have already been doing it for a while as well. So,
thanks. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, much appreciation, man. And so we'll be seeing you again soon. And thanks to everybody for listening. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Not Giving a Fuck podcast. For more info, visit artofnotgivingafuck.com or radicalundoing.com.